Chapter 32. Not many archers were brazen enough to try a headshot on a sentry. Too many bones, too many angles that could deflect even a perfectly aimed arrow. A man could turn his head fractionally even in the time it took an arrow to fly. Most archers thought such a shot was foolish, especially on a sentry wearing a helmet, especially in the gathering dark of an evening. But Winston was different. Danger was an abstraction too alien for him to grasp. Sometimes it seemed he couldn't even conceive of the possibility of his failing, much less the consequences of such a failure. He had disappeared into the brush minutes ago, saying he'd take care of the sentry. Kip could see where Winston had to be, but with their camouflage in the dim woods, he couldn't make him out at all. The sentry was walking the deck of a light-hulled scout boat, which had been drawn up on the bank about 50 paces downstream from where two huge barges floated in the river, tied to the bank with many ropes, with ingenious walkways spider-webbed out to them for loading grain. Given how low the barges were sitting in the water, this was not the foraging party's first stop. They were laden with some cargo already. If they were sunk, it would be a more significant blow against the colour prints than Kip had originally thought. Kip was hiding behind a mossy stone with Big Leo and Farcudi. The air felt humid and full. Kruxa had left to climb the ridge that separated this fork of the river from the waterfall and the village of Doraneve. Kruxa crept back now, putting his back to the broad trunk of a pine tree.
"Things aren't quite going according to plan," Kruxa told Kip. "Conarthur seized the warehouse rather than attacking and falling back. Must have been a weaker defense there than we expected. He set fire to two barges identical to these at their docks. Saw three other barges burnt out, different design though, so the town already had burnt their own. White King's people brought barges with them."
Worse luck for them, now that the Con Arthur had burnt them. But it also meant this foraging party was larger than Kip had hoped.
"Reinforcements?" Kip asked. "I saw maybe 200 soldiers from up here headed down the trail. They should be close enough to the waterfall by now that it will mask whatever noise we make. But if they look back, they'll be able to see any smoke until they get to the base of the falls. Their main camp is farther down in the valley, not up here. They have probably another 200 soldiers, and only O'Holland knows how many whites and drafters down there. I don't know if Conarthur has any idea how many people he'll soon be facing."
"He's got his orders. We have to trust him to figure it out."
Besides, Kip was the only superviolet drafter they had up here, and there was no time for him to climb the ridge and signal. Kruxa made the sign of the seven and muttered a quick prayer. Kip mimicked him. They'd need all the help they could get. Then Kip turned and peeked over the rock, just in time to see a sentry's helmet fly into the air, off the head of a sentry Kip hadn't even seen. Before that helmet even landed, the other sentry dropped instantly, an arrow angled through the back of his neck up through his forehead. Winston popped up from the ground. He'd been lying on his back to get the right angle for the two shots, and he'd crawled into the very shadow of the scout boat to do it. Kip and the Mighty leapt over their mossy boulder and bolted toward the boats. Before they even reached the scout boat, Winston had scrambled aboard with the dexterity of an acrobat. A third sentry, who had been seated below, rose to see why his comrades had disappeared, only to find Winston's knife rammed into his kidney and a hand over his mouth. Letting go of his knife for one moment while he still held the dying man tight against himself with his left hand, Winston waved them on. No other opposition here, so they ran directly to where the barges were moored. A campfire was being lit not far from the planks leading to the barge, and half a dozen men were standing around or helping clean up camp, or cleaning muskets, or repairing armor, or preparing food. They didn't see the Mighty zigzagging toward them, breaking the sight line with what trees they could, but mostly closing the distance as quickly as possible. Kruxa easily outpaced the rest of them until he stopped, suddenly tossing a small ball the size of his fist in a high arc. It landed just beyond the fire with a sound like shattering glass as the blue Luxin Kip had drafted broke open. The men at the fire turned instinctively to see what it was, and the flash bomb's yellow Luxin exploded into brilliant, blinding light. Kip was looking at the Mighty when the flash bomb geysered its light, and the light etched every one of them in his memory. Long-legged, supple Kruxa was hurdling a fallen tree with the grace and ease of a stag while carrying a long, slender spear. Big Leo ran with all the stealth of an avalanche, and just as much, frightening speed. The man managed to sprint while carrying a tower shield, and his short black beard was split by his ferocious, eager smile. Big dopey Farcudi sprinted with each hand streaming Luxin like smoke, green in his left, blue in his right. It was usually a sign of poor drafting, all that Luxin lost, but it was scary as hell. Farcudi's face showed an expression closest to regret. Ferk wasn't a born killer. Or maybe it just pained him to be thinking so hard. At 20 paces out, Kip threw his hands forward and hurled all his weight into shooting 2 Brightwater missiles. He'd taken what he could draft competently and brought it together. Namely, he could now make solid yellow into unbreakable blades, and he could shoot the great big green bouncy balls of doom, which were good for knocking people over. But not much else. On the other hand, throwing an orb of yellow blades or a ball of yellow spikes was pretty much impossible without cutting yourself to pieces, so he encased yellow blades in a green ball and shot that from his right hand, and yellow spikes inside a green ball and shot that from his left. They worked differently. The orb of spikes caught a man in the armpit as he staggered, covering his blinded eyes. The green Luxin bent and then broke apart, and the spikes stuck into him, caving in his ribs and sticking. The orb of blades hit another man in the face, the green Luxin flexing in, a blade slashing a cheek, and then it bounced off him, carooming into the neck of another man, and then off into the woods. The transference of momentum had brought Kip to a halt, so as he prepared his next attack, the mighty thundered past him. Truxa went for 2 men on the periphery who hadn't been blinded. One was a blue-white, just beginning his transformation, who still had the face of a man but wore no tunic, his chest a rippling crystalline wonder better than skin, impervious to the elements, but not impervious to steel. Truxa buried the spear through the white's chest and spun instantly, snapping off his dual-bladed spear at its blue Luxin haft on purpose, like a bee leaving its stinger in its victim. The other leaf blade of Crux's spear slashed through a green-white's arm and into his chest and out again, so light and thin and fast it barely slowed. The spear spun up into a javelina's hold, flinging blood in a circle, and then Crux hurled it into the back of a man rushing for the camp's cone stack of muskets. An arrow pierced the same man before he even hit the ground, and Kip saw that Winston had taken up an overwatch position behind them with his bow. 50 or 60 paces was an easy shot for the little archer, and he was picking off anyone who seemed like they might be getting away, or about to raise an alarm. Before Kip, newly rearmed, could make it to the campfire to join Ferkudi and Big Leo, the battle here was suddenly over. There was a splash from one of the barges and a yelp from the other. A man had fallen into the water at the nearest barge, and on the other, a soldier was staring at Winston's arrow buried in his thigh. Another arrow streaked through the air above him as he stooped to look at the curious marvel, but Winston's next arrow dove through his stomach. Bless Winston. His distance had helped him not get the tunnel vision Kip had. But Ferkudi had never paused. Running across the web of planking and lines, Ferkudi got to the arrow-pierced man just after he fell out of sight behind a low gunwale. A splash of blood answered Ferkudi's descending mace. Then he turned and looked back at them, unseeing for a moment. Ferkudi must have been gritting his teeth when he brained the soldier, because blood had shot across his face and across his white teeth. There was nothing young or dopey in Ferkudi's expression now. 2 images were superimposed on his face. In rapid succession it flickered between a scary, blooded warrior, the veteran he would be, and a big child, covered in wet mortality and scared of what he had done. That young Ferkudi looked like a child caught stealing candy, his face saying, "This is wrong, and I've done it, and I've been caught doing it, and nothing can fix this." But it wasn't filched candy, it was the crushed skull of a man, and being caught red-handed here was literal. Ferkudi closed his mouth as he looked at them, and his pink tongue darted out to clear his mouth, and then he blanched as he realized he was clearing his mouth of another man's blood. "Tst!" Kip hissed, waving. It saved Ferkudi. He shook himself and got control. He looked around, signalled. No one else was standing on the decks of either barge. "Perimeter," Kip told Winston, as all of them refilled themselves with Luxins. "But finish any wounded first. I can't believe we got this lucky. There may be more," he nodded to Big Leo, who was the other sub-red, red drafter. "You take the far barge with Ferk. I'll get the new one." To Cruxer, he said, "You collect Winston's arrows and our weapons as well as you can. I want this to be a clean raid, no hints. As soon as the White King knows who he's fighting, we lose an advantage. Then you come help me." "That puts you alone on that barge," Cruxer said. He'd already collected the point that had snapped off his spear. Drafting Blue Luxin even as he spoke, he locked it back into place with a twist. "We agreed that you would have an—" "Then collect our weapons quick," Kip said. "No time." Kip ran out down the walkways. He heard the distant rattle of muskets as another engagement started down in the valley. Good. He made it to the barge with no trouble. Everything seemed to be going perfectly. Maybe they had plenty of time. Maybe he should wait for Kruxa. The Mighty was too small. They simply didn't have enough bodies to do a raid like this. They were getting lucky here. More people meant more noise, more trouble with communication, more problems, but it also meant someone to watch your back. Hell with it. You worked with what you had. Kip threw open the door to head below. A muffled explosion from the other barge was the only warning he had that the ships were defended. He threw himself to the side as a scared young woman in front of him fumbled a linstock and fired a small cannon toward the door Kip had just opened. Kip was deafened and saw black spots swimming in front of his eyes. The door was shredded, but somehow he rolled to his feet. In a bit of idiosyncratic military doctrine, the blackguards were taught to attack an ambush. They were taught that the only way to regain initiative, having lost it to the enemy, was to attack. Immediately. Ferociously. This meant you didn't give yourself time to regroup or time to think, but you didn't give it to the enemy either. They didn't get a chance to enact phase two of their plan because they were suddenly busy getting killed. And Kip's training took. He charged the young woman just as she had turned her back and was trying to light another fuse. He chopped across her arms as she reached out, but given his dazed state, cut deeply across only one forearm. It was enough to make her drop the linstock. She turned, baffled that he was still alive, bleeding, and tried to draw the pistol tucked into her sash. He rammed his yellow Luxin sword through her belly, but immediately dropped it to grab her pistol as it cleared her sash. He trapped it in his left hand and wrenched it aside. She wasn't strong enough to stop him, and with her left arm wounded, she didn't have a chance to stop his right uppercut to her jaw. She fell to the ground, insensate, doing little more than groaning as she fell on the hilt of Kip's yellow Luxin sword, driving it deeper into her gut. Kip rolled her over and pulled his sword free. No small amount of blood followed it. The woman couldn't have been more than 20 years old, if that. Atashian dark hair and eyes, poor clothes. Just a girl taking orders. He should have felt something. She was unconscious, bleeding, certain to die slowly if not quickly. But he only heard Trainer Fisk's voice.
Never trust the dead. Men will faint from fear at the first charge and lie at your feet, but find their courage again when you show them your back. The mortally wounded will rise to play hero one last time. You can't always pause to make sure a dying man's incapacitated, but when you can, you're damn well better.
After Kip's sword came free of her body, he slapped it back into the side of her neck with all the emotion he'd summoned to sink a hatchet into a stump after he was finished cutting firewood. Satisfied from the sword's recoil in his hand that he had cut deep enough, he didn't even look down. He was already peering deeper into the gloom of the barge's hold. He followed the fuse the young soldier had been trying to light. It went to a charge against the hull, and then another, and another. What the? A boom shook the ship. Not an explosion here, but on the other barge. Damn it, it must have been rigged identically to this one. But it wasn't a trap. If it had been, there would have been more than one guard. Kip moved farther into the hold. There was nothing here except all the slaves at their oars on overcrowded benches and plenty of slaves in reserve. Slaves. While the White King railed against the Chromeria for practicing slavery. Asshole. There was no grain. But if there was nothing here, why set charges so you could scuttle the boat? For that matter, why were these barges up here at all? Kip had barely noticed in Crux's report, but this foraging party had already sent two barges directly to Dora Neve, but had left these here. Charges and separation had to mean a cargo. But what cargo? Kip had been flickering his vision between sub-red and normal vision to pierce the darkness for any violent moves toward him, but now he held up a green orb drafted to shimmer back to light. Despite the darkness, all the slaves wore blindfolds. Kip ran back to the dead girl in her spreading pool of blood and found a key around her neck. He ran to a tall man on the first bench, his pale blood forester arms permanently stained blue and green and yellow with Luxin. Kip pulled off his blindfold.
"Who are you?"
Kip demanded. He pointedly didn't unlock the man's manacles.
"I'm Derwin. I'm Aleph of the Cooney War,"
the man said quietly.
"Repaid for our faithfulness here."
"What faithfulness? Quick!" The Cooney War, the Dogs of Dawn, were Blood Forest's hidden society of warrior drafters. The man's stony sorrow said that he knew he was speaking his own death, and he didn't care.
"We saw no path to victory,
So to save our villages and families, we tried to make a separate peace with the White King. He ambushed us instead, captured us. We're being taken to him. We either give him our fealty or he takes our eyes.
Same on the next barge? Kip asked.
Yes, there were 230 of us.
You fucking traitors, Kip exclaimed. He paused for only one moment more. He couldn't tarry here. His friends might be dying outside at the other barge even now. He said, meet me at Fecheen Island if you want to find your honour again. Otherwise, fuck off and at least don't fight for him. He slammed the key against the man's chest. Scuttle the barge when you leave. No wonder the Blood Robes had set charges. A resource like 230 neutral warrior drafters wasn't to be scoffed at, and it certainly wasn't something you wanted to fall into the hands of your enemies. Kip ran onto the deck in time to see the other barge list to one side, great gaping holes in the hull from the charges. Ferkudi and Big Leo were on the shore, blooded. Kip couldn't tell how badly they were injured, but there were no slaves with them. That barge was going down with more than 100 semi-innocent men chained below decks. Cruxer was shouting at Kip, telling him that the bridges connecting shore and ship were about to collapse, that it was too dangerous, too late. He was right. Those men were going to die because of their own choices. Their own cowardice had led them to their chains. It made no sense for Kip to risk himself and everything he could accomplish to try a hopeless rescue. A man who can't swim shouldn't attempt to save the drowning. But Kip surged forward anyway, and ran for the widening gap between the sinking barge and the sloping planks. Ah, fuck me, he thought as the gap yawned wide. Why do I have to be so dumb? And then he leapt.